Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I am working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am working man, oh yes I am. I am a special agent of the Lamb.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to be with you on this lovely evening.
Mm.
Okay.
Come on.
I don't care for that.
I'm going to tell you where this came from. There was a couple of years ago, I can't remember, I saw some dude, I was watching a video, and some guy was preaching, and he was saying cool stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And there was some dude three rows in that's just, he's like, he's doing the come hither wave. He's like, come on. Like, just keep bringing the Holy Spirit. And I thought, that's the coolest man I've ever, I want to be this excited. And so, like, I organically just started saying, come on, every once in a while. And now I overuse it. I say it all the time.
Yeah.
And so I need, like, some follow-up phrases. Mm. I tried that grunt noise, but it's misconstrued.
Yeah.
So I gotta come up with something else that I can say besides, come on, because I say it all the time for just about any reason.
Hey, so, I mean, not to give you an assignment right at the start of the show, but, like, if you want to provide Mike some possible phrases to test out here on the program, you can use the Life from the Path complaint line. It's 515-517-0085. Call or text, and we're looking for phrases that Mike could use here on the show to represent affirmation or send more in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zip.
Yeah.
Dude, it's going to be hard to replace.
I mean, you didn't say come on like 3 years ago. What have you been doing with your life?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I actually wish I would have written down throughout my lifetime. Like, I will find a word and I'll stick with it for a couple years and I will overuse it.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what transitions it out or if I don't remember anybody like saying anything to me that made me want to change it. Like, I used to say, yeah. Like, I double said, like, a couple times. Like, for a couple of years, 3 years, I did it forever. And then I can't remember. I should have written them down. But, like, they just come in, and then they leave.
And they disappear. Like, fade away.
So, I don't know. Or, like, you know, like, you find a word that you really like, and then you just start popping it out all the time. And, man, it'd be so cool to go back and look, see what I've ditched, you know, in the last 5 years.
Okay, this is a legitimate use of the AI. It's going to take a really long time because we have a 550-show back catalog. But I keep thinking I'd like to run all the shows into some sort of, like, repository and just ask questions about the show. Like, hey, in 2017, which word was said most often on Live from the Path?
Oh, yeah.
Or which catchphrases and what level of popularity have we seen over the last 15 years? I mean, it would be super interesting.
That would be interesting. Yeah. And embarrassing.
Probably
a little self-indulgent, really.
Right. 2016, the big word was Jesus. 2012, the big word was not Jesus. It was whiz bang. You're like, oh, shoot.
And there was the peanut butter year.
Okay, you're listening Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the program this evening. This is a real smattering of stuff here. And so, Mike, I don't know quite how to phrase the thing that we were talking about, which is kind of like stay in or stay off the sidelines, or like, what's the right way to talk about it?
I don't know. Like, it's going to come out real harsh.
Yeah.
No matter how I say it. But like speaking of self-indulgence, right? Like, I just feel like I've been increasingly frustrated with individuals and then like local groups or parents and then like the church body as a whole, where I'm like, stop bailing on things and hiding at your house. Uh-huh. Just stop protecting yourself so completely, you know? And like, mainly speak, like when I've been reading through James lately, like I've never taken James is always known for being a book of action, right? Like, it's practical and it speaks to stuff and people are like, yeah, this will kickstart something or other. But like, and I've always kind of read it that way, but I've never read it in like the finality of which I feel it here lately, where it's like, listen, like when he says like faith without works is dead, like, we take it as we need to improve. You know what I'm saying? Like, we should do better.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll find a charity to get involved with, or maybe I'll help at Sunday school or something. And like, It feels like it's just way more sharp than that. That, like, you are literally refusing to sit in a chair. So the question is, do you believe the chair exists? Like, it's that foundational. Because there's no possible way that if given the option to stand all the time or sit in a chair, like, there's no reason you wouldn't sit in that chair if it was available. So the question is, do you even believe it? Is it even a real thing to you? And so, like, it just feels like it's been pretty sharp the way that I've been thinking about it and the way I've been praying through it. And then, like, it's been time after time, I just keep watching, like, people who profess the name of Christ getting as far away from brokenness as they can.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can you do this, though? Right? Like, if the Great Commission's in there, and, like, the life of a Christ follower is to be one of sacrifice and not protection and comfort, then how is this true all the time? That everyone that, like, even like within our schools and within like really broken situations where, like, we could just use some Jesus folks to get involved, and, like, we're like, no, never mind, the government will get it. And we're like, come on, what is going on around here?
Yeah.
And so, like, well, one, this is a litmus test on if it's a righteous anger or not, to make sure I'm not overreacting. Yeah. But two, it's a little bit of a call to action. It's like, don't make up acts to do. Like, live your faith out, you wuss. Like, I'm just tired of everybody running for the hills all the time.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we're going to come back to that. And I suppose, if you've got time to bail, if you feel like this might cut you a little bit to the quick.
You'll stay here and take this tongue lashing.
Also, I'm trying to figure out how to do this without going way too giant here. But the pondering for me for this week was how do we think about what systems or organizations or countries or companies or something, like the things that those types of entities have, the way they have to behave versus the way that individuals within those have to behave. And is it okay that they're different? And so, like, high level, could you say, is it okay for a country to have a different morality or moral level or type of action than the people that live within it? Or is it necessary that the country you do that same thing, or even a church? Like, if we say, is it okay that the people of the church are doing different things than, say, like, the church as the institution? And so, and I think out of that thought is a little bit of an encouragement. And so, like, I want to talk about that a little bit, because, like, especially as you think about political matters, like, a lot of times we spend our time trying to influence some level of the institution. And the question is that, like, can't you just do it then? Like, can you do it on your own? Like, is there a reason we keep trying to get institutions which move like a ship towing another ship, towing another ship? Or is there things that we can do? I mean, at a very macro level, like wildly big, where you're like, can't we just as humans do it? Like, maybe the U.S. can't do it as an entity, or they're going to suck at it. But you go ahead, go right ahead and do it. And so anyway, we'll touch on that only briefly, but I wanted to talk about that. Okay. And was there one more thing?
No, we got some dear life from the past, probably. Okay.
All right, we'll do that. All right. So let's talk about this. What do you think is causing this? What do you think is causing folks? It seems like there's a couple things going on where, like, there's a disconnect between, in some ways, what we believe and what we do, but also kind of a wariness of getting involved in situations that otherwise might put you, your family, or something at risk.
Yeah, I think this is where I want to make sure that this is coming out balanced, right? Because, like, it is not off the table that, like, especially when this is where it gets most frustrating to me, but I also understand the flip side of it when it comes to kids. And like I've had a couple stories even this week where, like, these kids, the kid I know, like, has a rougher home life, and, like, they had a hard time making friends. And then there was, like, this Christian kid in their school, and they, like, befriended him, and then they were, like, hanging out with him. They were going out to like, Bible school with him when they got a chance. They were eating dinner at their house and, like, and just looking how a family could maybe operate or whatever. And then all of a sudden, the Christian kid bailed to go to Christian school somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dang. Like, I get it, you know, but, like, come on, the kid was doing the work of what God calls us to do into his broken world. And, like, you yanked him. Like, dang, you know? And then, like, I've had some other kids where they're like, they were attending youth group and they were attending like these other functions, but like they were, the places were inviting like rougher kids. So they had a place to be and had a place to be loved and like could learn about Jesus. And they're like, I don't know if I like my kids around that influence. So they yanked them. And I'm like, where are you going? what are you doing right now? Like, I just, I remember I used to tell some of the kids in our youth group, I'm like, look, I know you guys love Jesus already, but I need you to realize that you validate the things that I'm saying, right? The things that I'm teaching out of the Bible, like, it's not validated as they look at a 40-year-old man saying it. It's validated because someone else their age believes it, lives it, and there's a noticeable difference in their life. So like, you're just as much as part of this equation as you believe that I am, you know? And so like, it's why God has you here. And so like when we start yanking kids that come from a house that loves Jesus and can actually bring light into a situation, because it's possible they might be vulnerable to outside sinful influences. Like, I hear it as a parent, I get it. Right, you want to protect your kids from that, and I think there's questions of age and maturity levels and all the things, right? But like the examples that I ran into here lately, I'm like, these kids were actually doing the work. Like, they were actually out holding their mud, like proclaiming the good news of Jesus, loving people like who were cast aside and hard to get along with and had all these rough edges, and they just kept inviting them in and inviting them in. I'm like, Lord, thank you for these kids and thank you for their families. And then I couldn't barely get that prayer of thanksgiving out before they're gone.
Yeah.
And they're pulled back to their house, hiding around with either a bunch of other private school kids where there won't be any danger. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, it just grieves me a bit that like for the thing that God equips, like if we are actually outfitted with the presence of the Holy Spirit, let's go back to adults now. Let's go to hold the kids off for a second based on maturity, right? But let's say that like as adults that we are outfitted with the presence of the Holy Spirit. I mean, hot dang boys, you should be able to walk anywhere you want. You know what I'm saying? You should be able to walk past all kinds of broken. Now, granted, like we are still broken humans ourselves, and there's certain things that tend to grab you by the ankle, you know, more than others. And so, yeah, maybe you should stay out of that. But like at the end of the day, like I just feel like I've had churches, like kids getting yanked by their parents, and then the parents like nuzzling in this little super tight community where nothing broken could ever come in. And if it was, it's like the windows are shut tighter. And then churches that like pray for like no outgoing prayers. Like they're where when Jesus says that like they will know me by my love or your love for them, right? Like that Jesus says, this is how the world's going to know. And they're like, well, we like to keep our love in this tight circle. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't like to bring it out, or I don't want to pray for stuff that's going on with the complete broken around me. I just want to pray for protection and comfort for my own like compound. And I'm like, come on, like you're wearing everybody. People are out there hustling here and you guys are like hiding, trying to build up bigger walls. And like, it's not like I haven't gone through some of this with my own family, and like I've probably exposed my kids to stuff earlier than I should have, or who knows, right? Like there was always a danger. There's a danger for me. There's a danger for us in walking around and being part and in a world that is actively fighting against what Jesus is offering. But like, how are they ever going to know the difference unless you're out? Right. And how are they ever going to see the work that God is trying to do? And how are we ever going to be a part of it if we know God's love by the way he loves us? And that's the only way we know it. Right. Like I feel love. God loves me. God is trying to help me. God is my comfort, my peace. And all those things are true. But like he says, the world knows that by you getting out into it. And like, I don't know. It's just been grating on me lately that I just see a whole bunch of Christians like hiding and bailing out of hard things and not wanting to get involved, or like, this is messy. Those kids are dangerous. That kid uses bad language. These kids over here are already had their phones since they were 9, and all they do is be on Instagram for 6 hours. I don't want my kids around something like that. I'm like, what? What do you mean? That's exactly where I want your kids. I want your kids to come with me and we will go talk to this young feller or something, you know? And so like, I can't tell whether it's just from my perspective as a youth like group leader guy that I'm like, look, I mean, I'm starting to lose credibility here as an old man, right? We need some fresh meat on the streets out there trying to help and like get people to feel what God is trying to offer them. And like, I just feel like it's people are just bailing, you know? You feel like that's systemic in the church? Some of that selfish praying, though, I feel like that's getting systemic in the church. Where like, it's just like, God, but like, grow our church. God, like, help us to find peace in these hard times. God, protect us from all this mess out here. Not, Lord, will you make the Holy Spirit so obvious in me that I'm just ready to go out and talk to whoever? Even the guy at the gas station or the dude that got in a wreck and he caused it because he was drinking. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Man, just where's the grit and the fire to get involved in gross sin and let Jesus wash that thing?
Yeah, that's a maybe part of that is I'm just trying to think from like the pastor's point of view. You're preaching, you know, separation and holiness and you know, living a holy lifestyle, and it comes across as, you know, you forget the part of, but yet you're still here, you know, you're still be in the world but not of the world type thing. We just say get out of the world, I think sometimes, or at least we it sounds like that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
And then like we forget to verbalize, but don't forget you're here. You know, we're called to these people. And I think a church can go through periods of times where you're emphasizing one or the other and rather than the balance. And at least I guess I can only think of myself as sometimes I'm like, oh, wow, I've kind of got out of balance here. I need to get back over on this side. And maybe that confuses just the average person, you know, who's just trying to live their life and figure out how to live as a Christian. They're kind of getting tossed around. And so maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
I mean, maybe, but you'd have to ignore the entire life of Jesus, right?
Right.
Like, you put this on the pastor, and I get it. And even as like a broken group of dudes, like, yeah, I've done this individually for sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, you find yourself, you're like, okay, I'm a little too far in this thing. But like, Jesus' example was completely holy, completely set apart, walking in the middle of mess. And that was his whole life. You know, and so like if he's our human example on how this is supposed to look, like you do all the things that God says, like creates you in a separated, holy, like follower of Christ, you know, and then you are unstained by the world, you know, and when you get stain on you, you repent of it and then you hand it over to Jesus and then you get back out there where stain getting thrown around and somehow it either don't land on you because you put on the full armor of God or it does land on you and you go, ah, God, I let my guard down. Can you forgive me and put me back to work? You know,
right.
Like it just seems like I don't know what we're trying to produce. You know what I'm saying? Like at the end of the day, like I've had these conversations with a couple kids here lately where like their big struggle is like, I don't know what I want to go to college for, what I want to do with my life and all this stuff. And I'm like, you could go to college or not. You could work at Burger Shed or not. You could pick up the streets in your town or not. Like follow Jesus wherever you're going, live holy, set apart in pursuit of the work that God is doing. And no matter what you choose to do, like this is what joy will look like and freedom and peace and all the fruits of the Spirit and success as far as God measures. That's what how success is measured. Now, your parents who know you better are going to say things like, look, I know what your tendency is to do. You need to go to college. Or, you know what I'm saying? This is where God put you in a community and a family to help you figure some things out. But like practically, the big red letter sign is just follow Jesus wherever you're going to go. Just make sure that like you are involving him in your questions and you're involving him in your decisions and you care what he says, not just I'm going to do this. You should bless it. Right. Like him being in the middle of it. And so like even if we set these kids apart and we kept them unstained by the world, and then when are they going to go out? Right. When they're 18 or 19, you know what I'm saying? Or 20 or 21. And then they start walking around the world and you're like, this place is terrible. And then like, what's their gut reaction? It's either to join them or hunker down. And now they're out of it. Mm-hmm. And then their kids are out of it, too. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, we just create generation upon generation of staying out of it. And like, that's a worst case scenario and not even a practical example of what definitely happens. But like, I think it's a little bit of my fear. Right. Like, I just want to be able to be praying outwardly as people who love Jesus. Like once you're saved, you're like, I don't want this room to be lonely. I don't want it to feel like God's work is done after me, and all the things that I know that he saved me from should give me enough gumption and grit to be like, Lord, fill me with the Holy Spirit and send me back out. Because there's another dude just like me on the other side of the block, and like that guy deserves better than he's getting too. So I'm going to go talk to him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Like, I wonder if there's a couple key barriers. I think barrier number one is when you start to mix what are clear, think of clear biblical responsibilities, right? Like you're supposed to protect your children. It's part of your job. It's built in you as a parent. Mm-hmm. In the same way, you're supposed to provide and be around for and lead your family. But like, can God send you, say, to go do missionary work for a year or go do something that is away from your family for a year? Could God do that in contention with your understanding of what it looks like to care for your family?
Yeah.
Sure, he could do that. And the same thing goes with how you think about your kids. Like you have a biblical responsibility to otherwise care for, protect, love, point your family. But the question is that like, does that understanding supersede you asking God, what do I do? How do we serve you best? Is this the spot of which like a place where my family or my children are supposed to be involved, even though it carries risk? Because it has to, like it has to. Opportunity is risk. These are the same. These two words are describing the same thing. It's just which side of the coin you're on. Okay. And so I think the question is that like, do I trust God with my children? And will I continue to listen to him and trust that he will guide me? One, if or as you get exposed to messy things that otherwise this person may be bringing a light into, they also can be influenced by. And so like the opposite can also, or the other side of the coin can also be true. The risk part, which is like, hey, I want to go. I think this is important to kind of like make sure that we are being light into darkness, and you or your children or something starts to get consumed by it and you got to bail and you can't do it anymore. Both of those. But like that's how we manage all scenarios, which is like, where is God pointing me to otherwise be involved or pull back or invest time or don't invest time or whatever. And that is true for your children as well. And as discerners of where the Spirit is leading them, then like you should, basically we shouldn't just not ask, which I think is somewhat of the thing. It's like, oh, I have a responsibility to protect them. And so you didn't even ask, like, God, is it better to leave them here? Is it better that they go to the place where the risk exists than it is to separate them from it because I'm worried that something's going to happen? The worry is righteous. God probably, like, you were built as a parent to have the worry, but like the same thing would be true for you. For any situation, it was like, hey, this is, it would be just like you might pray, Lord, should I quit my job and do something that pays half of that because it feels like maybe you're directing me towards that thing. You would have a worry because you're supposed to protect your family or provide for them, but God may still be asking you to do the thing that's a little bit unknown or a little bit risky. And so like in those examples, like I think that's the question. And the reality is that like not everybody's doing the same thing. There's some people, you got loads of people who are involved with things that may carry a risk. Even like certain levels of homeless ministry are risky. Certain things to like types of folks or situations or whatever. Not everybody does that. Not everybody's called to that exact thing. But I think the key question is like, are we asking? Did we ask God, is this the thing that I'm supposed to be involved with and that my children are supposed to be involved with? Or did we just go, look, isn't it my responsibility to protect them and you didn't even ask?
Yeah, and maybe that's the harder part. Like, but like, what do you do if you don't like his answer? You know?
you do it anyway.
Right?
But yes, but that's the hard part.
Because like, I mean, as Abe ties up his son Isaac and goes, I hate this.
Yeah.
I don't like that story is so flat in the Bible. You know what I'm saying? It's so flat. Take your son and tie him up. You're going to sacrifice him to me. And you just get Abe's compliance.
Yeah.
And you're like, boy, he's taking this chill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But like, you know, that's not what happened. You know, that's not how he felt about it.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, sometimes it seems so difficult because you think, you know, what God's going to do and how he's going to do it, right? Yep. But like, I don't know how long that you have to walk with Jesus before you have figured out that you have no idea what he's going to ask and you have no idea how he's going to do it. And you can be guaranteed it's not going to be in the way you figured. And like, it's, oh, that is the one constant with my walk with Jesus, is the inconsistency of which he accomplishes his means. Like the whatever thing that I thought was going to do a thing almost never does a thing, or it contributed to the thing in such a way that I had no idea it was actually accomplishing this, you know? And so like, we've talked about this a little bit before, like God will eventually, for example, want you to plant a church in Boston, and you, if he'd have told you that's what he wanted, you would have got on a plane and hit Boston immediately and said, all right, let's fire this church up.
Yeah.
But what you didn't know is the first 20 members were going to come from Denver, Toledo, and San Antonio. And then, but he didn't tell you any of that. He just creates a job opening for you in San Antonio for a bit, and you make some friends. And you know what I'm saying? And like, you never, if he would have just said Boston Church, you would have got there, opened it up to nobody, and it would have fallen flat on its butt, because the guy you picked up in San Antonio is actually the dude that knows some folks in that neighborhood and was going to bring it and get God's work done, right? Yeah. And so like, all of that being said, that like, presuming on the ways and means of which God is going to accomplish something because you have an overall directive, like, you just have to be so careful, you know, that you're, yeah, that you believe that you understand that, like, there's this one overall edict. And like, right now for us, like, sin is our overall edict. Sin is no. We don't do things that God said not to do, and we do the things that God would do, right? That's our guiding mast on how we get things done. But like, everything past that, oh man, it's a wild ride. You just, like, Dan goes to Africa on a consistent basis. Did Dan know he was going to do that when he was 25? He did not. He did not. And if God would have said, Dan, I got big plans for Africa and I would like you to be involved, Dan at 25 would have quit his job, told his family everybody's getting raised in Africa, and went over there and stood there like a moron and would have accomplished nothing.
Right.
Right. Until God was like, all right, it's Africa time, Dan. I want you to meet this fella. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so like, it just...
Ooh, that's a good example, because like, in that example, the heart would have been righteous. The intent would have been righteous. Yep. You do it because you love Jesus. You're willing to sacrifice all the things. God was not there with you yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you jump the gun to go do it. And I actually think some of that's true. You know, I think the difficult reality is the in like a modern Christian mind. I'm going to have to stereotype a little bit here, but like, the risky situations you're worried are going to create prodigals.
And they might.
But then I'll tell you this, a lot of times the methods that you're going to do to try to keep your kid from becoming that, you're going to turn it into that kid's brother.
Yeah.
There's what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Like, the difficulties in Christian schools, like, so you surround your kids by a bunch of other Christians. And like, again, Christian community is great. Go for it. But like, if they don't actually have a view of the world of which these things are happening, which the world is how it is, and it's difficult or whatever, you can become high-minded about it. I've said it on the show like a ton of times, and like, we've talked about it at church relatively consistently, is like, the risk of the house church environment, as an example, is like, in because of its stripped down nature, it feels like it has a purity that is somehow like better than somewhere else. It's an asinine thing to think. It's wrong. But it can feel that way because you're like, oh, we're not subject to all the other crap going on around here. Oh, yes, but you're subject to the different kind of poison, but it can be a poison nonetheless. Yeah. And that can be true on the whole, like, that the separating from has a risk of pretentiousness. Pushing all the way into with a heart for righteous work can also get you swallowed by the muck. And so like, these are both risks here, and let's not pretend like one of those risks is actually more holy than the other. But both of them can be appropriate actions, but like, it's the discerning voice of Jesus. But I think the big thing is like, did you even ask? Like, that's the question. Did you ask? Like, we've asked, I think every few years we're asking, like, is this time for either one or all of our children to go to public? We've homeschooled all of them. I'm open to putting them in public school if we need to. Like, if that's what God said, like, I would say actually pretty like strong petition a couple years ago was like, are we sure? Because like so far, this is the path that we've been on. Is it still the right path for us? And like, I have all kinds of reservations, but like, I also have all kinds of reservations in the situation that we're in, because our situation currently carries risks for not doing that. And so like, that's the question. Are you asking? Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Is it a different situation if it is so clear? Like if God himself in some way shows up to you and goes, tie your kid up, you're going to be like, I'm going to have to tie him up, man. I don't, because God said. But I think for the inability often to discern the movement of the Spirit, and I think from such a corrupt view of the Spirit that we're often getting from pulpits and from like teaching and things and just wacky stuff that you're like, I don't even know if I should be listening to any of this stuff. We can't discern the Spirit, which means we start leaning back on our own wisdom, and your wisdom predominantly will be protection.
Yes. Like, I mean, no one is going to look, like I said, I know this is fire and hot one side. I know you want to protect your kids. I want to protect my kids, you know, and but like there just feels like if I look at the biblical example of Jesus and then the rest of the New Testament, it's literally people putting themselves in harm's way, surrounded by brokenness, and usually suffering the consequences of having been around it without being corrupted.
Ooh, okay. So here's what's interesting contextually, I guess. Do we have this example, anything to go off from a New Testament perspective as it relates to youth?
No. I would say no, but I would say the age of which youth stopped in the Bible was like 13.
Yeah, also true. Like, yes, our notion of like you could be getting married at 14,
yes.
14, 15 and stuff. So like the notion of being an adult by doing adult things was certainly earlier.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed with that. And so are we in a different place socially where like we simply are not having, and our society is not set up to have your kids act in grown up ways and be prepared for it by 14, 15. Yeah, I do actually think we've probably, I'm not sure it's a disservice. I'm not sure. Jewish culture is not implicitly healthy,
right,
on how early they did a thing.
Yeah.
But like, I suppose like there is a, it's not a, risk is too harsh of a word here, but like, do all the example of the life of Jesus, do I say, okay, well then 5 year old, that's you. Probably not.
Yeah.
And this is where like churches have, depending on the denomination, like struggle with things like age of accountability and stuff like that. They're trying to figure out basically at what case should I be wary of behavior versus going, I don't know, their bodies just aren't set up for it yet and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I think there is a wisdom in it. I don't think you have to go. Frankly, I think there's some 8 year olds where you're like, I don't know, man, God just wired these kids different. Send them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it most 8 year olds? Probably not. And you don't go, look, they need to know the world and then set them loose on YouTube unrestricted. That's dumb. That's dumb behavior. You should not do that. And I'm sorry if that's what you did, but you need to stop that. But like, so there is, again, there's a wisdom in it. I think it's a communal question. I also think like the Spirit will guide, but like God did give you a brain to go, look, don't set up something that seems holy to go, Lord, I'll do whatever with my 8 year old in your service. And God's like, I did not tell you to send that kid into the wolves.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? You didn't honor me by showing up to Zimbabwe 25 years early. You didn't honor me by putting your kids on an altar if I didn't ask for it. And so that is the caution. But they both solve the same way, though.
Yeah.
Like you solve the same way to go, am I always asking? And frankly, I always have to ask. The way I think of it is like I have to ask double in a thing that I know I don't want. Like if my proclivity for whatever my human wisdom is on like, where do we go? How do we spend our time? What do my kids do? What do we eat? What do we watch? Whatever those things are that I feel very like firm about, unless they're biblically specific, I probably should be praying about those twice as hard to make sure that I am not trying to run my own show over Jesus's. And it doesn't mean any of those things that we may have made decisions on are not wisdom and he's not for. It's just it is my biggest risk for blindness.
Yeah.
Just like safety is most of the time for humans and their children.
So here's where I think I'm going to land is like, and maybe this is just advice coming from a youth leader guy, right? But like, it makes perfect sense to me to protect your kids from the weather outside, right? What doesn't make sense, like if you want to take the control or at least the ability to lead them well, that like when they're at home, don't open the window. You know what I'm saying? Don't expose them to crap at your house that you would be like, this is not the kind of influence I want in this house. This house is set apart. It runs set apart. This whole house runs holy. So that means like, if you're going to decry the world and its influences, I think that's fair to look at it honestly and go, when you boys go outside, you put your coats on, right? Like walk out of here knowing who you are, who Jesus is, and who Jesus says the people around you are.
Yeah.
Despite what comes out of their mouth and despite their actions, I want you to love them in this way. But just know, like you're gonna strength up in this house because this house runs holy and set apart. And then you're gonna strength up not just so you can stay in the house though. You're gonna strength up so you can go out into the world and do the work that God has designed all of us in this house to do. But you do get to come back here. When that world gets heavy, you will come back to this place of rest and peace where the God resides and is held in high esteem. You know what I'm saying? Like your house was going to be set up as the sanctuary of which if anybody in your whole community wants to know about the refreshing like walk of the Spirit, then they know it's found at your house. And it's found like where you are. And granted, like I'm with you. When you go out into the world and this is the way we're outpouring and this is the way we're surrendering, it's exhausting and it's going to test you. And you're going to have to lean on your faith more than you do in your house where the windows are closed and the storm ain't getting in. But like we do need to go out into that storm. You know what I'm saying? We need to go out there and get other people out of it. Right? That's the Great Commission part. The last thing the Lord says on his way up, and he's like, you're going, and I'm going to send someone with you that's going to make that all possible, that you're going to speak the words of my Father, and I want you out in there. And so, like, I think there's a balance to be had that doesn't quite come off so heavy-handed, but, like, the more we're leaning for withdrawal, 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 you're doing the exact opposite of what Jesus said is to go out and go out and go out. And so if your primary direction is in, right, with your prayers, with your actions, with your thoughts, right, with who gets peace and who gets comfort and who gets protected, if those things are inward focused, I'm just asking that, ask God if that's the season he has you in or if you're hearing him correctly.
Yeah.
Because I'm having a hard time thinking that when I'm watching kids and adults alike out there doing the hard stuff, and I'm watching God actually make some differences, and then God yanks them completely out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just having a hard time watching that, and either God's got something to settle with me, and I need to look at it differently, or God's got something different to settle with them.
Yeah.
And I'm open to either one, you know, but like, it doesn't have to make logical sense to me. It's having a hard time making biblical and spiritual sense to me.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, I have an example. I was talking to someone at a church, and they had there was someone there who like started coming, and they were there was some concern around some of the parents about the influence of this person. Like they were curious, but I'm not sure how closely they're following Jesus. And they're like, you know, I don't know, maybe we should be careful about, you know, the kids hanging around or like blah, blah, blah. And like, it was the wrong reaction. Like the right reaction is to go, hey, if there's a person who's at your place and who's curious about Jesus, like you could either go, oh, but we think that they may believe things that could be a negative influence. Like, I don't know. Shouldn't you just go help them not continue to believe those things?
Yeah. Saddle up, Zachariah. It's your time, buddy.
Go, yeah.
Yeah. Like don't, you're solving the wrong problem.
Yeah.
And I think that is often the case. And so like they, but it feels easier, you know, you can control like how much time you hang around certain people. You're like, well, I can do that. It's a much harder effort to go, hey, how do I point them to Jesus? But like to Mike's point, like that's the go and make disciples part. Like that's not drag in and protect my disciples. It's go and make more. And so like that probably should be the default. Is like, I presume I'm supposed to be involved in doing that kind of work, unless it is clear that either God is like there isn't any, or like God is not is specifically saying, no, I want you to focus over here. But like, I, you know, as an overarching theme, go and make disciples is actually a pretty clear one.
It's funny enough, like I had this conversation with my wife today, and like I told her, I was like, as of late, I have a really hard time like finding time to be me. Do you know what I'm saying? Because there's so many opportunities and so many things to be doing that I'm like, what if I never like fixed my house again? I'd give that up to like get the opportunity to talk to people about Jesus. What if I never worked on another car again? You know what I'm saying? What if I don't golf, but like, let's be like, what if I'm just done golfing? You know what I'm saying? And like, I kept going through the list of the stuff that like, I don't know, if you had to look at me from a 10,000 foot level and you weren't going to talk about Jesus stuff, what would you say that Mike does? You know what I'm saying? Like, these are the things that if there was zero things going on, Mike would default to X.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know that I've defaulted to X in quite some time.
Yeah.
And I thought, am I no longer me? Am I just like a pawn in like this Jesus work operation? And I thought, I don't think he wants that. But like, do I think he cares if I ever wrench a car again? No, yeah. I don't think he does. You know, and so like part of me goes like, I thought, what a weird problem to have. But actually, I feel kind of blessed to have the problem. I'm like, who, apart from the identity that the Lord's given me and the work that he's given me to do, what do I do with myself? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, that's a better question than, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I know everything that I would do. I need to make sure I set apart time to keep my golf game up, or set apart time to make sure that like I'm doing woodwork, because the woodworking hobby is what really makes me me and gives me the refreshments. And like, I think that's cool. Don't get me wrong. None of that sin stuff. Right. But what I'm saying is like, if you're looking around and your heart's got the same opportunistic look at people as Jesus does, you're going to be like, screw that table. I bet I could go to coffee with Tim.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, like I said, I knew this was going to come out a little harsh, but I was trying to figure out how to weigh it out in my mind that I'm like, God does get to do individual things with individual people. Like, he knows people in an intimate level, and like, I can only see broad swaths and then people not saying anything. And so like, I could be taking the whole thing in wrong, but I know biblical principle wise, like, I know we're designed to go out. And so like, at the end of the day, it can't always be the answer that you and your kids are in. It just cannot always be true that we're hiding from everything. Cause like, at the end, what my big concern is let's say you did everything right by your own measurement. You raised them, they stayed out of trouble, right? Like, got even through college, and like, they're not out like, hey, they're going to church. They still hit like some kind of salt group. They're working, you know, they're just living a regular life. They're not really making any kingdom work happen, but they're not really getting sucked into drugs and, you know, a bunch of mess. And then they get out of college and they get a job, and then they just do the same thing with their family. And then we just keep raising generations of safe, not in the broken. And then what? Jesus is like, I mean, I'm glad you had a safe life, I guess. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't involved much in it, you know, because humanly you can keep yourself pretty comfortable and safe by having money and staying away from trouble. Those things will do a lot of good work in the world for you. But like, funny enough, the adage for Christians is like, we are kind of looking for trouble, because that's where light goes. light shines on trouble. And so like, we're kind of have one eye open to go, that looks like trouble. I know what helps trouble. You know what I'm saying? And so like, that's what that all is about. So maybe it's just a question to pray on, right? Like, God, am I hearing
that's
you
right,
correctly?
Yes.
Right? Am I hearing you correctly? Or am I stepping out in front of you? If my family, or if me personally, or my kids, I need to be praying for them in a way like that puts them out helping to make disciples in a way, or at least reflecting your light into a society or a world that doesn't get to see it. If I'm dimming that light for comfort reasons, will you just help me to see how to stop that?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is like, if this helps tie, I think a lot of times we treat that the Laodicea example of like being lukewarm. That's not a salvation deal. Where God is going like, I either want you on fire for me, or I'd prefer that you just give me the cold shoulder. That's wrong. This is about usefulness. The usefulness of hot water, the usefulness of cold water.
Dude, do you want to get into heaven and go, man, I'm so glad I'm in the presence of Jesus? Or do you want to walk in the gate and go, hey, there's literally 20 people here that like, I totally know. And I like talking to them. They're like, I am so glad you happened to bring up the fact that Jesus is king, because it turns out Totally right. Look, there he is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's what we were built for. I just can't. There's no loneliness in heaven, but like, it's got to be weird when Paul rolls in there with a group of 7,500 people, you know, that he took whoopings for to prove a small point. And then you're like, I made it safe here.
Yeah, yeah. I dodged a bullet, Jesus. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Good thing I got you. That's what bought my ticket. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. Hit us up with any feedback on that one on the Live from the Path. Bob Eisler, complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. Also, remember, you were to include any. Mike's going to test out some phrases. If we get a good list, he'll try them out on the next show, and we'll see how they work.
Yeah,
we'll
pop
see
it.
See if they catch on.
Pop it. What do you think of that one? That one got some zip.
Okay, so let's...
Ben, what? Don't ignore my phrases.
I don't... No, I'm not the person who gets to say.
Say something else. I got another one.
And that's... we're going to talk about a new topic here coming up.
Ha! Zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom.
I don't...
See? It's going to be hard to replace.
I don't know. Dan enjoyed that, but like a junior high kid would enjoy it.
Yeah. It doesn't have a long longevity said, zoom, there. Zoom. I don't know.
Okay. So, I'll be honest. We're not going to delve deep into this particular topic. It's not...
It's a mid-level topic.
Yes. But I was pondering this question as I was pondering this recent bombing of Iran... Where I'm like, I don't think this is probably good. I don't think, you can't police the world. I'm not sure we should get involved in all the things. As a country, I think you can't be on the hook for it. Frankly, I think it postures you towards aggression. And I don't know. I'm not sure it's healthy. However, is there something compelling about evil getting reckoned with and people finding the out of oppressive regimes? Yes, I actually think there is. And so... That level of thing got me to thinking, like, so what would you do if you're not supposed to go and like just invade all the places and do all the bombing and all the stuff as a country? Let's just presume that's right for now. But you do think actually, you know, you could support them overthrowing their own place. Can you just do it individually? Can you send your own? Can you and a group of dudes go like, you know what? We're just going to go help out in Iran.
I'm going to go topple a country.
I'm not sad. Like, I think they could use some help. I think I'm going to go over there. I'm motivated to personally help overthrow. And so that's a little bit of a thought exercise, but it pushes down and it got me thinking just kind of holistically of a pattern to say, like, is it right to think that there are, it is not always necessary that you change whatever the systems are around you. You can actually just act like an individual and that might be the most effective thing. And so just a couple examples, and I do believe we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but like, if it's fine for a nation, for example, to say, look, we have to know who's coming in and out of here. Everyone needs to come in the same way. You need to do it legally. Otherwise, you can't stay in the country. Do I think that's a legitimate thing for a country to protect its citizens and its resources by doing that? Yes, I think that's fine. I think that's totally fine. As a human, though, and probably particularly as a Christian, you're not actually you shouldn't be smuggling people across the border. Like, you can't violate the laws. But can you take compassion on those people? Sure. Can you go down and serve them at the border? Can you open companies that provide them jobs on the other side of the border? Can you try to change laws or find ways to get them in legally? Absolutely. Can you decide that like your whole ministry is just going to hang out where people are fleeing difficulty and try to find and work with countries to find solutions for these folks that have places to go? Yes. Heaven's sakes, yes. Absolutely to all of those things. Absolutely. And so is it okay that whatever limitation this institution may have, the country may have, the responsibility may have, does not extend in the same way? You're not bound by that. And so, but you are bound by the laws, but you're not, nothing says that you can't on your own go do the things that your heart is moving. And so like, maybe if we spent, I mean, even one millionth of the time using your own hands, feet, pocketbook, heart, love, care, water, food, medical supplies, and all this stuff, and put it towards helping in some way the people that you are concerned about. And I think you have every reason to be concerned and compassionate to folks. You can either change the whole machine or you can go, let me do with every ounce of thing I have to go serve these people well. Because it's not required that you change the whole system. You, within your own power, can go do these things. And I think the same thing about churches. I talked to some guy one time. It's been a while ago. And he's real frustrated because there was something he was real excited about. I don't remember what the thing was. Just pick a, I don't know, sex trafficking or something that he's like, I want my church to be real fired up about it. And
they were not.
The pastor didn't do it. He didn't set up a giant campaign. They didn't divert the fall harvest giving or whatever this stuff was they got to whatever this thing that this guy wanted. And he was real mad that the church didn't do it. And like one of my questions to him was like, well, I mean, did you give? Did you support the thing? He's like, no, I think it would be much more impactful if the church did it. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? You are the church. Just go. Why don't you start giving money? And like, why are you trying to farm it out to the pastor to go set up the thing God put on your heart? Like, go ask people in the church. I'm sure you'll find a few. There'll probably be two or three people who's like, you know what? Ted's real excited about this. Ted, I love your passion for it. I'll, you know, how can I help? And then Ted's going to say time and money. And three people are going to choose very low amounts of money. One guy's going to choose time. And eventually one dude will show up who's got a big amount of cash. It's going to be awesome. All right. But that's what's going to happen for Ted. Why? He has no reason to be mad at the institution when he has within his ability to go do a thing. And it doesn't mean it's not powerful for institutions to do things. And sometimes making systems and organizations better is the most efficient way to help the most people. I totally get it. I'm just saying that your hands aren't tied in a lot of these situations. And so maybe just the thing to think about is that you feel powerless as an individual, but like everything's made up of individuals. Once you reduce the thing down, you're going to end up with individual people doing individual things. Sometimes some of them get together and do it together and it can get more powerful. But like, I wonder if we're using our time proportionately well, trying to change massive institutions or infrastructures or some things when it's like, I don't know, just do the thing one that's right in front of you. And if you think something that's not right in front of you is totally righteous to do, then you should go do that. And I encourage you to go give it a shot. If there's anybody I would turn to, it would be Dan Hudson. No one can take an idea and immediately have some action to it within like 5 minutes than Dan Hudson, which is funny because the vast majority of people I know will like think, well, they're going to ponder it for like a long time. What's the best way to do it? And like, how can I get it to work out? And they're always trying to set up or manage or change systems. No one moves the next inch like our friend Dan. And so I'm encouraged by it because it's just like a reminder. And some of them work out. I mean, Dan would say this, like some of them work out.
Some do. Yeah.
Some do not. Yeah. Right. But yep. Like, it's what you could do, mm-hmm. and so you did it.
Right.
And so, anyway, it was an encouraging thing for me. It got me thinking. I don't know. I don't think you should probably go to random countries and join their freedom fighters, but you can. You can if you want to. And so, anyway, it was just something I was thinking about. Yeah. Sometimes you can't change the world, man, but like if you can by changing the few feet in front of you, and you should probably do that.
I think most people probably don't. Well, they might be thinking about like right now, like the war is out there and stuff. But I mean, I think the average person mostly is worried about issues like, you know, the homelessness, we need to do something about welfare. Yep. We need to do something about why isn't anyone helping, you know, this situation over there? And I think that's where as believers, like we're doing a disservice by waiting for the government to do it.
Yeah.
Or just expecting them, or that's often the argument, you know, like, well, aren't we supposed to feed the poor? Like, yes. You are supposed to feed
the
poor.
Go ahead and do that.
Like, well, let the government do it. It's like, okay, they can do it what they want, but really, I am supposed to do that. And that's where I think it getting personally involved, it doesn't take, you just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you don't need a new system. You don't need an organization. You don't need a 501c3. Just go out and feed somebody.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And like, I even heard, someone was having a conversation recently, like, hey, man, it's because they changed some of the SNAP benefit laws
in
a few states and like, oh, they can't buy any soda anymore or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. I mean, if you're really upset about it, like, go pick up some soda and go take it to somebody. Yeah. But also, if you're like, hey, man, it's a real scandal. People can't get by on the amount of money that the government provides, or they can't buy healthy fruits and veggies. I'm like, okay, grow some. Mm-hmm. And take them over there, or hit up the farmer's market. Now, what is often difficult, actually, we had tried to do this, and like we actually had a hard time getting someone to take vegetables. Oh, like, yeah. We had grown some kind of intentionally to go, oh, we should go, we're going to go use our space to go help. And like, people are like, no, we get those through Hy-Vee. We don't it's kind of like you can't take Valentine's and homemade brownies to the school anymore because kid might have a nut allergy, or Ted Kaczynski might be your dad or something. And so like, they just don't want you bringing in random crap. I get in some ways people rely on bad systems, and the only way to do it is to change the systems. But like, I think it's an encouragement. Like, if you can't solve the mile, then go ahead and solve the inch, and then keep praying on the mile.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, like, how often, like, systems in general, like they sound like such a great idea, right? But like, we'll put in systems that actually didn't ever need to be scaled, mm-hmm. you know? And like, we're like, this will be solved through a process that is repeatable and can be counted upon every time. And like, it never fails, no matter what system it is. It is repeatable, but it cannot be counted upon every time, and it cannot fit the nuance of what the situation is being asked of the process. Mm-hmm. And so to fix it, we create another process within the process to try to catch the nuance, except for it overswung a direction. Yeah. And then we're like, oh man, we need another process that would keep this from overswinging. And like, the truth is, like, a human on an individual level would have saw all that within 3 seconds of being in the situation and went, here, take this. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Or guy who is like, who you're enabling and not helping, you go, you won't be taking this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so like, you need help of a different flavor, and this is not going to actually benefit you. So I'm going to withhold this from you. You know what I'm saying? And so like, it's funny, because like, we're a very individual society, but like, we push all our problems up to the collective, as if the collective is not a bunch of individuals. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's this faceless entity. And like, you know, like, you've been a part of government things before. I don't care how great your government is. It's got 200 years worth of processes layered in it, trying to figure out how to handle nuance of human behavior.
Yeah.
And like, there's one clear entity that can handle nuance behavior of humanity, and it happens to be the Holy Spirit, right?
Yeah.
Who can go like where that? Who can give discernment in a way that goes, yeah, this is risky, but it looks risky on paper, but no, I'm doing this, right? Opposed to is like, you're going to stay out of this because this is chaotic and it has no bit of me involved, and so like, it's not going to resolve even with your help.
Yeah.
You know? And so like, I do get it. Like, you're like, they take money from us for taxes, and so they should be doing all these things. But like, I was trying to think of an example that might solidify some of the things you're saying. But like, it's like you live in a town that takes, you know, like a local option sales tax or something for the town. And then like, there's this guy in town, he's super nice, and he becomes handicapped.
Yeah.
And then he requires like a wheelchair ramp to be built at his house. And they're like, we think the city should install a wheelchair ramp at this guy's house.
Yeah.
The city is going to go, no, no, we can't do that for X number of reasons. One, we take taxes from everybody. We can't use it at Bob's house.
Yeah.
Two, if we install a ramp at Bob's house and Bob hurts himself, or the mail carrier gets on there and falls down, then they're going to sue the city. The city's got big pockets and they know it. And then we're liable. Like, there's no reason for us to get involved. Yeah. Right. But Bob's neighbor, and like, let's say the town's only got 7 people in it. The 7 people individually in the town can build this ramp all day long.
Totally.
No problem.
Yeah.
And then just go, when someone gets hurt, goes, it's a ramp, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know? And liability is not handed out anywhere. And so like, there are times where like, the system has to protect the fact that the system exists in the first place. The system has to act different than an individual could. The individual has more freedom, even if it's part of a system, than the system will ever have, because the system always has more to lose
Yeah, yeah. The systems are designed to accommodate variance. Individuals don't have to do that.
Yes.
And actually, I didn't think about this until how you said it made me think of, like, sometimes the perniciousness of the facade of an institution. Who's coming to the DMV? Individuals. Who works at the DMV? Individuals. But somehow, the DMV as an institution has taken on a consistent flavor across every municipality of which it exists, even though you could look at your neighbor who works at the desk and goes, dude, this is crappy. And you go, this is crappy. And it's not necessary to treat individuals that way. But somehow, because you're under the banner of the institution, we're like, well, I've been changed into a DMV man. it's so crazy because, like, it's a fake thing. In that moment, it's a human and a human. But somehow, we start acting like we're not two humans dealing with each other anymore. We're emissaries on behalf of a faceless box. And it acts like something has changed about how we are as humans.
So, like, this is actually what perpetuates our presidential elections. We're like, we'll get this guy. He'll fix the systems. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And what has been historically true since our country's inception? No one has nailed fixing the systems. Mm. Most of them like to create even more systems. Like, I've passed a new law. Very rarely are they like, I'm shutting this stuff down. Now, old Trumpo's a little different. He likes to cut. But like, most are like, we're adding this. We're going to put this layer in. We're going to create this department that focuses on this thing. And like, you're just adding more systems to manage on an organization that already struggles to maintain the systems it's got.
Yeah.
We can't even enforce the system that is currently in place because most of these systems actually aren't as bad as you think. They're just not enforced to any way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, like, there's rampant fraud and people are stealing. And you know who's stealing from it? Individuals. And you're like, this system is broken. You're like, no, the guy stealing from the system is broken.
Yeah, yeah,
No one like watches a guy take seven whole chickens out of the freezer and make a run for the door at the fairway and goes, I can't believe Fairway allowed this, right? We go, that dude stole seven chickens.
Yeah, actually, so what's so interesting about that, so take as a quick example, if you think about healthcare and provision, like Medicare and stuff within the United States. So, like, there's $100 billion of fraud in Medicare a year, and they know this. Like, they know that it's fraudulent. And then, so what you would do if you were in the store and you saw a guy grab seven chickens and start to run out the door, you would look at the dude and go, hey, that guy's causing higher prices for everybody. He should stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you would be part of tackling or go get him or whatever. Like, you participate in the stopping of it. But we don't do that. We look back. It'd be like being in the same store and looking at the guy who runs the Fairway or the Walmart grocery and go, hey, like you are screwing this up. No, you shouldn't. You should eat it, whatever this fraud is, because it's your problem, not mine. Even though, you should never raise the prices because you're harming the poor people who needed the cheaper groceries.
Yeah.
Right. And like, communally, we should be like against the guy stealing the chickens, but instead, it's as opposed to going, dude, you should lay down hard on that guy and he should never be able to get chickens from here again.
Yeah.
But we don't want to do that. And we don't want to have to put any individual thought, effort, or whatever into it. We just want to blame the faceless thing. We want to write a letter to corporate and tell them that they suck.
Right, because Fairway's response to you, because like if you go to Fairway and go, hey, it's unreasonable that you allow people to steal chickens.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we'll hire security to watch chickens all the time. We'll have two dudes look at the chicken aisle and just sit there and stare at them and make sure what's up, you know? And they're like, well, how are you paying for that? Are you going to raise the price of bread to cover the security guys? Like, I mean, we got to raise something. We just generated $150,000 worth of salary here to protect the chickens.
Yeah.
You know, and people are like, this is outrageous. And you're like, here's the thing. The guy stealing the chickens was the whole problem.
Yeah.
Right? Now you're just mad at Fairway because they allowed a thief. I mean, like, it's just such an asinine thought, you know, but like, it's pervasive. And we've been conditioned to think about it this way for so long that you find yourself jumping on the bandwagon. You're like, you know whose problem this is? Government. You know what I'm saying? But like, now granted, government has problems. I'm not a fool, you know? But like, but at the end of the day, if you would just be willing to like sift through some of this mess, the chicken thief is the problem.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. You know what I'm saying? And so like, I don't even know where we got to start talking about this, but like, it's so difficult because people seem to lose, people including me, I guess, depending on the situation, but you lose your ability for rational thought that goes, everybody's not a mustache twister all the time, right? This especially comes up with like the immigration debate is one where it's most abused, right? Where people make it a complete heart issue or they make it a complete legal protection issue for a country, right? But at the end of the day, if you were to turn around and think about it and go, just pretend your house is a, it's exactly what it is. You pay for it. You manage it. You know how much money's in there. You know what you can afford. You know how you can take care of the people there. And a guy comes up to you and says, hey, can I live at your place? And you're like, well, I don't know you. I don't know where you came from. I suppose I might be willing to take the risk. I don't know. You'd have a couple thoughts about, well, this guy's going to be around my daughters, or do I have room in the basement, or what if he gets hurt? Can I pay for him to go to the hospital? He's going to eat food that costs money. You know, he doesn't say that he has a job, but he said he's willing to get one. How long can I float him, you know, until like it kind of sinks the whole ship here? You know, like I would ask the same question about taking on a wayward family member that the United States is asking about letting someone in the country. Now, to be fair, it's very convoluted and difficult to become a full-fledged U.S. citizen. It takes a lot more time than the immediacy of their situation feels like it dictates, right? But also, like, the problem is not the United States' ability to let someone in. The problem is the crappy, war-torn mess of a city they came from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, the actual problem is people are doing evil things where they come from. That's the problem, right? It's not whether they can come in this country or not. The problem is their home sucks because evil things are happening there. So if you want to be mad about something, you should be mad about that. Now, I know that the immigration debate is much more nuanced and there are injustices that are done. And like as a system, there are parts we do not great.
Yep.
Right. Embarrassingly bad, frankly. Right. But like, if can we just agree, if you just put your rational thinking cap on, the problem is like people are running away because they have such a horrible country that they live in, or they want to live in this country for opportunity. I totally get it. And I don't blame them. And I think they should follow the process and totally come in here because I would love to have them as part of our great country. But the problem is not how we're doing it. The problem is that they're being forced to have to move somewhere else because their home sucks terrible. The evil is being done over there.
Yeah.
And you should hate that more than you hate the necessity of having to have them flood into the country. But frankly, if you want to bypass all that, we should go back to Mike's system of immigration, which means you should vouch for them and let them live at your place. You take care of them. You make sure they get a job. You help them get health insurance. And if you can still vouch that they're a good, productive citizen a year in, we'll make them a citizen. Done.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. Maybe you don't have any feedback on that.
Or maybe you're super mad because you're like, that's an oversimplification of our problems.
For sure. I mean, for sure. But, yeah. Yeah. Whatever. That's the thing, though, is that like however complicated these systemic problems are, I don't know if they preclude you from taking whatever action you may want to take tomorrow.
Dude, you could buy a house in their crappy town and bring all your money that you made from selling your place in the United States and bring hope to that town. You could probably buy a mansion for what you own in the United States, and you could say, everybody live with me. We will pool our money together, and we'll hire guards, and we'll start taking out these crime syndicates one by one.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I don't want to get that involved. Oh, well, I see. Well, then we'll just pass that responsibility on to somebody else.
Right, and that is generally the problem. It's like, I want to advocate very strongly that someone else get involved. Yeah. That's the thing that needs to stop.
But the thing is, is like, that's probably the exact same point of our first discussion too.
Yes.
Is I want to advocate very clearly that God's people go out and do X, but I do not want to get involved.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, samesies.
Okay. Say it pretty much is the same conversation.
Yep. Okay. What do we got?
Okay. Dear Live from the Path. I'm going to just add, where I get the source, the Dear Live from the Path from, the website has become very overtaken by ads and weirdness.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, it'll just refresh the page and I'll lose everything. Oh, no. So just know if they've been a little staggery lately, sometimes we'll have a discussion. I'll look back. Question's gone completely. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. Path? I have always looked inside a person before casting judgment. It has been 6 years that I've been close friends with my neighbor, quotes Tim. I've always regarded him as a Kramer from Seinfeld. I have OCD. I am a clean freak. I work hard to support myself and my kids. Tim is on every government program. He's a hoarder. His dog is filthy, and Tim literally has to leave notes posted in his house to, quotes, remind himself to wash his own hands. Tim is politically my opposite. He's narcissistic, and if you disagree with him, he gets crazy, raging with anger. I have remained friendly with him because I feel bad for him. Tim is always asking me to go out to dinner or an event, and I'm always turning him down. He doesn't have much money, so when he needs something, I help out. Lately, though, because I feel like he's taking me for granted, I have been quietly pushing him away. Tim has now become increasingly needy, both emotionally and financially. How can I end the friendship without sending him into a spiral?
Whoa. Tim's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
He's a real interesting dude.
Yeah. I would also submit your description of yourself. Like, you've just painted yourself as the best person ever. And then you're like, and then there's Tim.
Tim's a problem.
He's not only politically opposite than me, he's pretty terrible.
So, okay, here's I'm listening to this description of Tim, and I know I'm not supposed to like him. But then I think to myself, like, I don't know, doesn't look like he's trying. He's setting up notes.
Yeah.
To remind himself to wash his hands. Like, this is a man who's trying. Whatever his normal base level reaction to the world is, seemed like it's probably difficult and probably a little bit abnormal compared to how most people live. But he does look like he's in some way trying to do good things, even though it's not his natural bent. I find it interesting that he invites you, like he's trying to build a relationship with you.
Yeah.
I mean, is he trying to, like, have a date, or is he just trying to know his neighbor?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think he's just trying to know his neighbor.
Yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't have the air of romanticism.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, like, by your description of Tim, it feels like Tim is probably not a high-functioning individual.
He's not dealing with a full sandwich.
Yeah, there's a... It's just what... I'm going to tread lightly here, but, like, the maturity of someone that has to remind themselves to wash their hands. The fact that they're doing it means like someone cared enough about them to help them set up a system of which they would remember. Right. Mm-hmm. But like there's a large amount of the population that does not require a note to remind her to do something like that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like you're either not telling the full story because you really want to be mad at him. And if you said, hey, like he suffers from a mental disability or whatever, people would think you're a turd.
Yeah.
And so my guess is you are a turd and and Tim has some issues that you don't share. And so like instead of like at least having a little empathy, not excusing his raging anger that you claim he has, but like at the end of the day, some people's capacity is only so much and they're running at full. And I feel like you held out every bit of information that would actually point to the truth, which is like he's not operating at full capacity and you, sir, are judgmental and kind of a turd.
Yeah. I mean, just don't. Okay. His question was, how do I basically sever ties?
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay. So here's the difficulty neighbor. Is that like I would try to talk him out of it. But like if his position is that he wants to sever ties with his neighbor, maybe you're not a good friend to old Tim. Regardless. Yeah. And so maybe it's fine if you sever ties.
Yeah.
But like generally speaking, what I would say is that like I think it's okay to go, look, man, Tim's not my favorite guy to hang out with. But I'm going to be generous with my time. But just say like, look, once a month you'll go out with Tim. And you know what? Don't bring up politics. Talk about the Detroit Tigers or something. Like, I mean, there are a billion other things to talk about. Mm-hmm. Not everything you believe has got to get hashed out with someone who disagrees with you.
Right. Yeah.
Just let that go. And maybe go help him clean his dog or something.
Well, this is the thing. It's like, What if this? I've really cited this guy, but like, it feels like manipulation to me. Like, his question was, is how can I end the friendship without sending him into a spiral? What I think is true, because I've definitely given you a character, is like, you're not so much worried about Tim's well-being. You just don't want to feel guilty because you are not over there helping emotionally and financially a guy that needs help.
Yeah.
You know, and you just don't want to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And so, like, to a certain extent, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with putting up barriers, right? That says, look, you need to know where your help can stop, and like, both financially and emotionally, how much time that you can devote that is healthy to both like enrich your family, but still love Tim well. But like, some folks won't stop taking, you know, and like, that might have something to do with their capacity, but it also might have to do with their selfishness.
Yep.
You know, some people don't realize that they are causing such strain on your family because of their individual actions. And sometimes you just got to set boundaries up and enforce them, and that's okay. So like, I don't, what I think is probably the actual truth is like, it's not an all or nothing proposition. Like, if your friend, if you're Tim's friend, you have to accept like his narcissism, his raging anger, his need for cash and time and emotional support and all this stuff. Like, you don't have to just take what's on the table and go, it's either this or nothing.
Yeah.
You can go, Tim, here's what I can offer you, my man, right? Like, I'd love to watch the Pistons game with you come Thursday, but I'm pretty much out the rest of the week. Can I, I'm also washing my dog Saturday. Can you want to bring that animal over here? We'll get him, give him the shine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, set some terms that you can live with that is still helpful to Tim without letting Tim get in the driver's seat and dictate how your life runs.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the safer route.
Yeah.
Agreed. If you're not a dirty liar, and you, and like, you're leaving a bunch of the story out, which...
Yeah, I guess the broad impression to me is that because Tim disagrees with him politically, he's being very harsh with Tim.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real true.
Yeah.
What I mean, and here's the truth is, like, funny enough, like I know quite a few people who like suffer from things like that. And like, you'll be like, where did you get this political opinion? Like, they are so tuned up on like stuff that like you would think they would have no interest in.
Yeah.
And like, they've just been spoon fed by a family member or something who's also fired up, but they don't have the nuance to put it in its right compartments.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they like just fire really hot for some reason. Okay, here we go. Secular says, friendship is supposed to be reciprocal. From your description of your relationship with Tim, it has been all take and no give. Because this relationship has become so lopsided, continue refusing his invitations, be less available when he wants to dump his troubles on you, and quit giving him money. Wow.
Would she? Oh, did he say he was giving him money?
He said he needs emotional and financial support.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, is it the belief that, like, every relationship you have has to be one of which you are getting what you give? I don't think that's, I think you should settle that in your mind to know that that's what this situation is. But like, does Tim even have the capacity? Like, basically, who's going to be friends with Tim? He's got to find someone that's in his exact type of situation to otherwise have a reciprocal friendship. And I don't know that that's necessary. I think you do have to be cautious of having too many people around you that are always just like sapping and you don't have any way to recharge. Like, I think that's a risk to people. But like, generally speaking, if you go, look, this relationship with Tim is like, I'm not going to get much back. He's not going to provide me emotional support. He's not going to energize me.
I mean, I'm just being honest here, fellas. Like, how many reciprocal friendships do you actually have? I bet I got four.
Yeah, maybe four or five, yeah.
Maybe, right? I have way more friendships that are completely lopsided.
Yeah.
And I'm not thinking of not being friends with them. I'm just like, I need four, five that I pour into, they pour into me.
Yeah.
Right? But like, after that, I'm just going to assume as you go out into broken, you're going to be pouring out. You're right? Like, that just feels regular to me.
Yeah.
And so like, I think if we're being real honest, like, if the modern thought that every friendship has to be reciprocal, it's really hard to be generous if everybody has to be reciprocal.
Yeah, that's true. It leaves zero room for generosity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's just not our, now obviously secular is going to answer different than us, but like, our approach to life is pretty much one of sacrifice and surrender to what God has you doing and in the service and love of other people. So like, as a follower of Jesus, you are probably going to pour out a lot, you know, and like, This is where God refreshes and renews and restores, and you set boundaries and you get yourself some close reciprocal friendships. But like all the other friendships, they're just going to want to talk because you're the one reflecting light into the world. And so they don't have a whole lot to offer you anyway, because the world's wisdom kind of sucks. So like really your reciprocal friendships are people who reflect Jesus back into your life so you could take it in.
Yeah, exact change.
Exact change. All right, next one. Dear Life from the Path, my spouse and I host regular meetings of a book club. It has been very successful. Lots of people attend. We serve wonderful food and wine. Two attendees rarely miss this event, although they have never actually been invited. They come by default with their spouses, whom we did invite many years ago. We are not fond of these two women because they are whiny and annoying. They go on and on about their ailments and life problems, and they rarely have anything insightful to say about the books we discuss. My spouse and I wonder if they have ever read a book, much less one of the books that we cover. We're not sure if anyone else who attends feels the same way, but we do know that some of our friends have hung out with them. I often tell my spouse we need to drop them from the invitation list. She says we can't because the other attendees will notice and will look like the bad guys. Is my partner right? Is there any way to stop inviting them without looking mean? I'm worried we will be stuck hosting this pair forever into our old age.
I don't know that you're looking mean. I think you're mean. Like, they seem very concerned about the appearance of the situation.
Yeah.
Hey, the other people around will think that we don't want them there. That's true.
You don't.
You don't want them there. And so either deal with the consequences because you feel like it's justified, or if you look around and the whole community that you've invited in here is going to think poorly of you, it's possibly because you're behaving poorly. And that should be the trigger to stop behaving like that.
Yeah.
So is your advice to just tolerate this?
Yes.
It's actually not as probably as bad as you're making it out.
Yes. Yeah. And I here's my guess, too, is that like if you set up a real book club or whatever and everyone else participating and you got a couple of looky-loos in there who ain't reading the books and talking about their ailments, you're probably doubly irritated.
Dude, welcome to Sunday church, dude. Yeah. There's like four people that really care what's going on. Everyone else is just there to yap it up.
This is what I'm saying. And so you can always, you gotta have to retain some optimism that they're eventually going to be taken in by this book.
This is the way the church runs.
That's what I'm saying. And so like, but what are you going to do? You're going to look around and go like, okay, we're going to pray. Those three guys back there, not praying. You're out. You're out. You three, yeah. Out.
You're out.
But my wife's next to me. Don't care. She gets to stay. You, sir, you're out of here.
You embarrass us.
Yeah, take your kids.
You're making our church look bad.
Yeah. And so like it's a tough spot. You could, now maybe, and maybe you've tried this and you just didn't mention it, but have you tried engaging these people in such a way to go like, you know, what did you think about the book? Or, you know, like just finding, I think there is, we've lost a little bit of ingenuity that goes, hey man, how can I help turn this into what I want? As opposed to recognizing for something I don't want and then immediately trying to take action to separate myself from it. Again, related to earlier conversation.
Yeah.
So like, what would need to change? What? And so like, maybe when you've exhausted all the things, maybe it'll be clear that you've exhausted all the things and everyone will be like, look, man, Marianne really tried. She really tried to get that lady in here. And instead, she just dominates all the things about her bunion and her hernia. And we don't ever get to talk about the book. Then the group will shame and it will work itself out. It doesn't require your own internal action. But like, I don't know. Can you see it as a positive challenge to go, I wonder if I could figure out a way to get these people engaged.
Dan, you feel like this is like an art that people learn from interacting with people, how to like guide them in a way that keeps you from having to say the blunt thing?
Yeah, I mean, people, they don't like confrontation. They feel uncomfortable, so they'll kind of back off, but they want to and disinvite them. I don't know.
I've seen people be good at this.
Yeah.
I mean, I recognize this actually. It's one of the things that like I keep saying I got to put sticky notes up at my desk to make sure I handle situations like quickly. But like immediately, if someone says, like they give a comment on something I've created or something at work or an idea I had, like I'm immediately defensive about this. I'm like, I gotta, I got to defend this. Like, they're wrong. They're thinking about this wrong. And here's the deal. A lot of the times they are, actually. I'm pretty good at what I do. I'm mostly right, actually. But but the way that I approach the reconciliation, this is not healthy. There's no reason to go about it this way. This person just has a thought. There is a skill in helping win people to your way of thinking, as opposed to try to convince them that, like, how what they were thinking was dumb. And, like, there's a way to do that. And it's actually an art that I'm not very good at, but I'm trying to get better. And I'm just saying that, like, I don't know, have you tried anything else? She said that the other couples hang out with this lady.
Yeah.
This sounds like a personal problem.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Maybe you're a little jelly. Maybe you can talk to someone else and say, hey, you know, Barb doesn't, she doesn't seem to enjoy the book thing. Do you think there's anything I could do? Have you talked to her about it? Does she enjoy our book club or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you could encourage her to read the book. I don't know. Like, have people help. I'm just saying, like, just try some other things.
Here's the thing. I can tell you right now, I don't like whoever wrote this letter, because they refer to this wife as spouse, spouse, partner, wife, spouse, partner. Like, why don't you just say my wife? You know what I'm saying? Like, why are you saying it like this?
Mm.
Like, I've never, hello, this is my spouse. Like, it's just a weird way to say it.
Right. This is a role this person has in my life.
Yeah.
Like, and his description, he didn't describe. Here's the way he described the ladies. These two women, we're not fond of them. Ugh. Charleston wrote this. We're not fond of these two women because they are whiny and annoying. They go on and on about their ailments and life problems. They rarely have anything insightful to say about the books we discuss. What I didn't hear was they get ravenously drunk, tear the place up, tease the dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not causing a bunch of destructive behavior. They're just not doing the thing you want them to do. And, like, you're like, this is a book club. We're here to talk about books. And that's the whole point. But I'm going to guess that almost everyone else in there, the book is reminding them of something in their own life. And they bring it up as part of the discussion, and that is not bothering you near as much. You just don't like these two ladies, right?
Yeah.
And, like, they're not your flavor of people. But they're coming with their spouses, right? And so, like, you invited their spouses, and so, like, yeah, that stuff comes as a package. You're going to have to figure out how to be a three-dimensional human here and, like, distract them with the TV show or bring the dog out and be like, hey, the dog loves them, and you guys pet them if you want. You know, like, figure something out.
Yeah.
Okay, Secular says, you very well may wind up posting these two pills in perpetuity, unless at the next meeting you establish some rules that should have been made clear from the beginning. In order to participate in these get-togethers, members of the group must have read the book under discussion and refrain from discussing other topics during the meetings. To do this is not unreasonable. Certainly not fun.
Yeah. Who's going to be the police? This is an right? HOA. Turned into a book club.
Okay, you want to do one more?
Yeah, do one more.
Then we're out.
Okay.
All right. Dear Life from the Path, my mom and I recently got into an argument about her mortgage. I'm on the mortgage and a title to her home because she couldn't afford to be on it by herself and needed my income and credit to help her. So I did. I helped her. I am now married and my husband would like to refinance our home. Problem is, I'm still on the mortgage to my mother's house. I've asked her twice before to let me off the mortgage, and she responded by saying, I can't. I need you. When I asked again this last time, she blew up at me. She thinks my husband is controlling me or manipulating me to ask her to let me off the mortgage. Now she, quote, hates him and doesn't want to see him or his family. She's barely talking to me and acting super cruel and vindictive. It hurts me that she is acting like a 5-year-old having a temper tantrum. I'm so sad. I just don't know what to do anymore. Any advice? How do you get off a mortgage? Someone have to buy you out?
Pay it off.
I mean, do you just sign a paper and be like, this person's no longer liable, just me?
They have to go through the credit check and all that stuff and all the underwriting or whatever.
They have to
basically
rewrite a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like, there's no way the mortgage company is going to go, okay, we had two people to collect from. Now we only have one. We're not doing this free.
Right.
You're going to have to re-sign up for a mortgage with us. I mean, it's not as simple as either the husband or the wife are making it out to be, like, just let me out of here. You know, like, you made a binding legal contract with an entity called the mortgage company.
Yeah.
And they're not just going to let you tool out of there because you want to. So, like, there's more to it than that. But the mom's, maybe the mom doesn't understand that either. I don't know. You know, like, do you think she's being generous? I wonder how old her mom is. I don't know. You know, she's 50. Is that different than if she's 70?
I don't know.
Dan doesn't feel strongly about it.
I'm not sorry, yeah.
Okay. Well, So do you have any advice?
I mean, she needs money. She's 70. She has a harder time getting work. So it probably is harder for her. She's 70.
You think the mom might know something about her own financial.
Yeah, yeah.
That she's not letting the daughter be privy to.
She can't do it on her own. Mm.
She's like, I need you. Not I need you emotionally. I need your
greenbacks. I need your money. I need your... Yeah. I need your name on here or I can't have this house.
But the mom's covering the mortgage. She's paying it.
Yeah.
I wonder why that's stopping the husband. Because basically the refinance mortgage company is going, this woman already has a $200,000 house in her name. We're not refinancing you. How'd they get it in the first place? Yeah, I got more questions than answers here.
Yeah. Looser lending standards. Things have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Okay. I'm just going to give the secular answer. We're going to bop.
Okay.
You have, secular says, you have my sympathy. Getting your name and the financial guarantee that goes with it off your mother's mortgage may not be as simple as you would wish. It's time you spoke about this with an attorney with an expertise in real estate, because extricating yourself may be both time-consuming and expensive. Yeah, probably cheaper than refinance, or more expensive than refinancing. Whatever money you were going to save refinancing in your other house, you're going to pay in attorney's fees and getting yourself off the mortgage to your mama's.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed it because I was doing something else. Is the mom wants this to happen or does no?
The mom does not want it.
Yeah.
And now hates the husband because she thinks the husband is the driving control over this attempted refi. Oh, but it's a refi of the husband and wife's house, not the mama's house.
Oh.
Right? And so she's like, for the refi for the husband and wife to happen, the wife's got to get off the mama's mortgage. And the mom is not letting it happen. It's like, you will not get off this mortgage. I need you to be on it.
Hmm.
Probably because the mom doesn't qualify for the loan herself.
Oh, well, right. Okay. This is a classic. You just want to blame the big company. That's fine. The mom should start it. Go try the action, and they'll go, oh, if you get off the, we won't allow this to happen. We want you both to secure the loan, and the mom can just go, look, man, I tried, and they won't let me do it.
Yeah.
And if they let her do it, then she should stop protesting. This is relatively simple.
Well, you feel like the mom's just personally offended. But it's a weird thing to be like, I really love it when people are on my mortgage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Or, I much prefer you pay higher interest on your current home. Like, none of those two make sense.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's probably just afraid. But she's. It's very possible that she's afraid because she thinks something's going to happen, but doesn't know for sure. And so it's probably just a little bit of paperwork. Give it a shot, and it fails, and it's going to, either way, this will get resolved. Either it fails with the company, and she can say that she tried.
Yeah.
Then everyone's going to be fine, because hey, I wanted to do the thing. They wouldn't allow me to do the thing. Stupid insurance company. Okay, fine.
Yeah, or but mortgage. Then the husband's going to go, okay, your mom's mortgage is screwing us. We cannot refinance.
That's too late, homie. We signed up, and they won't let us off of it.
Yeah.
We gave it a shot.
Yeah, and then the husband's going to have to go, well, we'll pay our current rate then.
Yeah. Or you go figure out why this other mortgage company actually cares. If they gave them these two mortgages, somebody agreed to have both of these mortgages on the books, this guy.
This is where I'm suspect, because at some point, they originated the husband-wife mortgage with her name on her mama's mortgage.
Yeah.
So somebody said this was fine, and now you're going to refinance it, and they're like, no, no, no.
Yeah, and presumably the situation has improved as both of those mortgages are being paid down, and so unless you're just, and maybe you just need a supervisor or something on your side that goes, look, I can't get off the mortgage, but you know our payment histories, just let me refinance. I'm not going anywhere. Let me refinance.
Heck, I'll refinance both these mortgages. Come on. Double commission, buddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. It's sometimes... I don't know, maybe this is just because this happens at my house, too, which is sometimes the kids have a bad idea. The older ones, they're like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. And I know it's a bad idea. I don't think it's going to work out. And my wife is prone to trying to convince them it's a bad idea. And I'm like, I don't know. Why don't I just, they'll try it for about 5 minutes and they'll go, you know what? This is probably, and they'll stop on their own. Like, why do I?
Yeah.
Either. And sometimes you keep your kid from touching the stove. It makes a lot of sense. And then sometimes you go, you know what? It's a lot less effort and they'll probably actually remember it better if they do it and decide they don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
And then that'll be fine. So yeah. I think just let it happen. Just go ask the mortgage company whatever. It'll work or it won't work. And then you'll be fine. It's not personal anymore. Mm-hmm. You blame the mortgage company. All right.
You've been listening to Live from the Path. Zip. Come on.
Come on.
Yeah. No change. What did I say? Exact change.
Yeah. Okay. Exact change is a cool phrase.
You're listening to Life from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We really do appreciate it. Hit us up on the Life from the Path. Bob Eisenhower complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. You got any reaction to the show, complaints primarily, or if you got phrases for Mike to use in the next show, we can do that.
Yeah. Paid in full.
No, I know. I use the finance metaphors. You stepped on my toes.
Paid in full is a cool. Paid in full is a more street level cool thing to say than exact change.
Yeah, all right.
We
all
got
right.
rid of the penny. This doesn't mean anything to anybody anymore. Anyway,
that's right. No Lincolns.
Maybe
no Lincolns.
Maybe no Lincolns.
I'm gonna call the complaint line so that you have to say all these. I'm gonna call in with like 10. All right, you're listening Live from the Path. We're gonna cut you loose. In the meantime, be faithful to the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Cuts through the night. Let truth stand tall. Let wrong take flight. Olive trees weep, vineyards scream ash. The feast turns bitter, bread turns to trash. The rich hoard wealth poor.